Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello, I'm Johnny Owen, and this is a Line of Duty special edition of the Best 11 podcast. As well as writer Jed Mercurio's Best 11, we've got all the best bits from the Johnny Owen and Friends special. Vicky McClure was with us in the studio, and we were joined by the show's other stars, including Martin Comston. But first, this man. It's the gaffer, Adrian Dunbar, a.k.a. Superintendent Ted Hastings.
Morning, everybody.
You've got certain phrases that have become synonymous with your good self. Were they yours that you put in, or were they written for you and you now own them?
Well, going back into the mist of time, as we have to do, and how it all started, I think I chucked a couple of things in. I think then Jed picked up on that. Jed was, you know, he's got his ear to the ground in Belfast, picking up bits and pieces. I'm sure people were saying things to Jed, saying, you know, why doesn't he could say this or he could say that. And then, you know, the Mother of God stuff is basically a lot of my things that from my dad and Sucking Diesel. And, you know, I got dropped a few in myself. So it's kind of, you know, a 50-50 share out between the two of us.
What's the new one for this series, AD?
Ooh. Yes, I've got a howl your wished.
Howl your wished.
Howl your wished. I think that's the Northern Irish version of heisht, which is in Wales. It's a very Celtic thing, which is, be quiet, is it? Would it be something like that?
Yeah, be quiet, yeah.
We
and
say
Martin
in Wales,
says in Scotland, say howl your wished.
Did they say, yes, it's obviously a connection with the three countries, but you always laugh at the Welsh going heisht, don't you?
Well, I don't laugh, I say it a lot to
heist.
You.
Heisht,
heisht, heisht, heisht. So how are you watching tonight, Adrian? Tell us what's your sort of ceremony when you watch one that goes out live on television.
Well, I'll be over, tonight myself and Anna will be sitting down to, you know, watch Line of Duty. We'll probably open a bottle of Cremant and have a bit of cassis and Cremant and just kind of celebrate the fact that another series is going out and just do it like that.
You're listening to the Best 11 podcast from TalkSport.
Martin Comston. We're trying to get on the phone now, who's filming at the moment. So I think he's in between.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he is. Bless him. He's taking a break from set. We're trying to get him up.
In which case,
we got him. We got him, Vicky.
Ah, good.
There he is. Martin Comston. There he is. Detective Inspector Steve Arnott. Here he is. Celtic fan, born and bred, proud Scotsman. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. How are you all feeling this morning?
Very good. How are you feeling? The big night is upon us. How do you feel, Martin?
Ah, mate, between the game today and the show tonight, my anxiety levels are through the roof. One way I'm actually kind of glad I'm at work, just so I can try and focus. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be running between takes, watching it on the telly, and I'm in a car tonight, so between both, but hopefully at least one of them will have a good day, but, you know.
Listen,
I'm genuinely just a nervous wreck this morning.
I'm just going to bring in a fellow Celtic fan, Vicky McClure, who is I've really pinned her colours to the mast. It was great because when she did the video, we'll talk about it later, but it was a great thing when she went to me, I'm getting lots of fans of Scottish team. Is it Rangers? I'm like, yes. She goes, they say it. I'm like, yes. Well, you're a Celtic fan now because you're in a Celtic top.
Welcome to that
Listen, let me make something clear. If I said to Martin I was Rangers, there'd be problems.
But what maybe, I mean, for better or worse, that's, I mean, a quick look at my timeline this morning, you'll see what really what this rivalry comes at. Sometimes, I mean, it's not pride sometimes, but that's what makes it so intense. Because I remember that day, Vicky just put up a video of herself dancing in a Celtic job, which I had to get her. And she called me that night and said, is this what your Twitter's like? It's so stressful.
It is so stressful. What on earth? A bit like, no, I was being asked earlier about your accent, because obviously you know, very Scottish. And in the show, you do not... No, I know. But your accent is so
110%
thick.
Scottish.
He's 110%. But it's so hard. I mean, me and AD, we get an easy ride. We don't need to do the accent thing. How hard is it? I don't think I've ever asked you. Do you have a hard time?
Well, no. Well, I mean, you're not going to do your Scottish accent on the radio.
No, I'm not. I'm a McClure. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
You'd think with McClure, you'd have it in you somewhere, my love, but it's not there.
I'm hiding it.
But it's because the dialogue is so dense, even without an accent. Those lines in that dialogue would be a challenge in just the sheer length of them on their own. So the problem is I need to stay in it that much, because if I'm worrying about an accent on top of trying to do scenes of that length, then I just fall to pieces. But as you know, after usually about two or three tenants, the Scottish
nice
that
paint.
Was the thing
my late father, this is a credit to you, Martin, a testament to how good the accent is. When he first seen him on BBC Breakfast talking in a Scottish accent, I genuinely thought he nearly fell off the settee going, he's Scottish!
He did that, exactly.
And I was like, yeah, he does the accent. He's like, oh, I never realised that. I was like, yeah. So he genuinely thought
he
was from...
Martin and Gillian Anderson. Yeah. Have thrown the nation into turmoil when she turned up and she had this purple cut glass English accent.
Vicky did an Irish one for the
thing. Which was really good.
Yes,
really
with, good. She played Susan McHugh, didn't she? And she stayed in character, a bit like you do, Martin, on set. Fans have done this. When you go to Line of Duty filming, Martin talks to you, you know, in the evening in his act. He stays in the accent. It's brilliant. And Vicky did the same. She stayed in the accent. So I'd be getting up in the morning and, you know, Vicky, I'd come to you, morning, Johnny, you know, and I'd be like, I love. And I was like, you know, I was
do
like,
you know what was strange about that though?
Yeah.
Do you know what was weird though? We had a lot of Line of Duty crew on Mother's Day because it was shot in Belfast.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, they're not used to me doing this. It's so weird.
So you become a bit self-conscious about it.
That is what's difficult.
Yeah.
That is, you're absolutely right. See, like if I had to go on another job now and change, like it's hard for me as well sometimes in Line of Duty when they cast a mate. And then when the mate comes in and then I have to, like, when Stephen Graham come in and have to speak to him in English at first, you just want the ground to swallow you up because he's looking at you like, what are you doing?
And also Kelly MacDonald, who's Scottish.
Yeah, but see, it's easier with Kelly because I don't know Kelly. It's when it's somebody you know, that's what's really, it makes you really self-conscious when you're out for dinner, because you can tell because when I first met you, and we became mates, I've sort of been doing both the whole time.
Yeah.
So you and Eddie just take me like that, whereas... If it was people I'd known before, they're kind of like, we know this isn't you. So
why is he doing this?
I get more cocky with the English accent as well.
It starts in the read-through, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, Martin, from one Celtic fan to another, what's your prediction for later?
I mean, obviously I'm always going to back Celtic, but it's just... I mean, our defending on set plays this year has been shocking. Rangers had a big game the other night, which obviously you're hoping to take a bit of the leg. So I'm going to go for 2-1 Celtic.
I'm going to go 3-1.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, Celtic. I'm going to go 2-0 Celtic. Here's the big question, though, Matt, as well, like, between me and you. This Guard of Honour, what's happening there? Are they going to give
that
them
ain't
one?
Happening.
It's we're not, is it? And the thing is, they didn't
probably
give us one,
wise.
Did they? So there's no complaints. No, people in TalkSport saying this to me as well. I'm like, well, hang on. A few years back, same thing. Do you know what I mean?
That's not nonsense as well. We've never given each other either one, so it's not going to start now. And I hate all this. Be bigger than them. No, it's not about that. It's like, give them nothing and they give us nothing. That's what it's all about.
This is why it's one of the world's great rivalries in sport. Long may it continue. I love it. Martin Comston, detective in...
No, he got your rank wrong earlier.
She's on this, Martin. I don't know what's about it.
It's a big
is
thing, isn't it?
Promotion, Johnny.
I'll give you a promotion, Martin. I'll call
he
you
a
detective.
He gave you a promotion. He called you D.I.
D.I.
Dapper. D.I. Dapper.
So what is he, detective what?
D.S. D.S. Arnott.
Detective superintendent, is that what it is?
The one below Vicky, as she constantly reminds me.
It goes D.I.
Yes.
S.C.
Yeah.
and then O.
Okay, there's enough...
D-I-S-C-O.
Oh, Martin, thanks very much for joining us. Yes, yes, enjoy your shoot.
This is the Best 11 podcast with Johnny Owen and Mark Webster.
This is Johnny Owen and Friends on TalkSport. It's a Line of Duty special, and it's now time for this week's Best 11. This is where we ask someone from the non-sporting world 11 questions about their love of football and the team they support. Our guest today is a brilliant writer, producer, director and novelist. After studying medicine at university, he was commissioned as a pilot officer in the medical branch of the RAF. He then became a hospital doctor and wrote BBC drama Cardiac Arrest under a pseudonym while still in practice. He subsequently retired from medicine to continue his writing career and is the man behind such shows as Bodies, The Grimleys, Bodyguard and, of course, Line of Duty. This is the brilliant Jed Mercurio, and we started by asking him who he supports and why.
Well, obviously, this will come as a real blow to most listeners when I say it's Man United.
I like it. Man United. So you're not a Manchester boy.
I've been apologising for a long, long time. And then, of course, you have to come up with the reason why.
You do.
You support Man United if you don't live within 1 mile of Old Trafford.
Or at 50 games for them.
Yeah, if you can't trace all your lineage to Salford and the docks.
Yeah, it's kind of like someone going into A&E and with some like really involuted story about they slipped and landed on a Man United emblem. So with me, it's actually the fact that although I spent most of my childhood in the Midlands, I actually was born in Nelson in Lancashire.
Yes.
And I lived there until I started junior school. And I had an older brother who was a Man U fan, and that kind of just swept me into it. So by the time I arrived in the West Midlands, I professed that I was Man U, and it always got a reaction.
I bet.
If you kind of said, oh well, you know, Nelson, that's near Burnley, and that people don't care.
No.
But if you say Man U, it gets you some kind of feedback, usually negative. And you know, when you're trying to make your mark in a new town, it's kind of helpful.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's amazing when people have said it's often because of your father or your brother that you will pick a team and you will support that team. And, you know, listen, they're the biggest team arguably in the world.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. They were the successful and glamorous, especially in the 60s and sort of even into the 70s.
They're probably still that top team internationally, I would imagine.
I think so. My older brother was the same. My older brother was a Manchester United fan more than sort of the local clubs. It's just the way he was. You know, I always tended to go to watch Merthyr and Cardiff. He was just Manchester United. And so I understand it completely. Can you tell us what your earliest memories of football are?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting as well, because what a lot of people probably won't know, depending on how old you are, is there was a time when Man United weren't that successful. They actually got relegated.
They did.
And were rebuilding. So the first manager I really remember was Tommy Docherty.
Yes, the Doc.
And that was the first Man United side. And the first time I saw them play live on TV, I mean, was for the FA Cup final in, I guess that was 76 against Southampton. But my earliest memories of football revolve around internationals. So I can just barely remember the England-Poland qualifier in 1973.
Oh, don't. The ball goes under a foot and destiny has
the
changed
The goalkeeper,
forever.
The clown, Brian Clough called him a clown before
that's
the
right,
game.
That's right, Tomaszewski.
And he has a stormer, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I remember that. And then I do remember the World Cup final that was played the following summer in 74. And I remember the FA Cup final that was played at the end of the 73-74 season.
Liverpool-Newcastle, yeah.
Liverpool-Newcastle, yeah. And I actually watched that game up near Liverpool. We were still at that time up in the north, and we went over to some friends who lived in Widnes. And they were Liverpool fans, so we watched the game there.
Well, so, and you weren't, you know, an absolute killing, you know, thrashing there was Liverpool, and yet you stuck by your guns, and that's the important thing with your lowly Manchester United, yeah. So that's commendable of you. Do you remember the first, obviously, the first game you actually got to see them in the flesh?
Yeah, that I do actually, and although my brother went to football a lot, he was actually quite a bit older than me, and he really started going when he went away to college, and he was in Derby. And so he was seeing Derby regularly, and I was still living at home in a town called Cannock in Staffordshire.
Yes.
So the first opportunity I really got when I fell in with people who were proper match goers was when I went to university. I went to Birmingham, and a mate of mine there, Andy Sill, was a Man U fan, and he suggested going to Highfield Road to see Coventry Man U. Mm. And so that was I was like 18. That was the first game I actually went to live, and we went and Man U won 3-1, and Robson scored. And I remember it was the third goal, because it was getting quite tight. It looked like Coventry might equalise to go 2-2. We were directly in the line of sight between Gordon Strachan, his shot, and it going in the sort of far corner. So that was my first recollection.
I remember I went to Highfield Road as an away fan. It was a very specific ground. You were in that corner on the terrace and the high fences, you know. And they always took thousands away Manchester United. Always have, probably always will. Did you manage to get in the away end, or did you have to go in the home end like a lot of Manchester United fans?
Keep your mouth shut.
No, we seem to be in with a kind of Man U fans. It was all very celebratory when we didn't have to do the thing of pretending to look kind of upset. Yeah. Or, you know, because obviously,
flipping hell, they've scored a third.
Well, also, I'm very much a behind the camera kind of person, so my acting wouldn't really pass
muster. If you sent someone to watch the game for you, they could have done a much better job.
I need to cast someone, but then because. Initially, I saw them away more than I saw them at home. The next game we went to, Andy and I went down to London, and we another one of our mates, Si Parfitt, was a Gooner, and it was actually the opening game of the following season, the 86 season, was at Highbury, and we went down for that, and that was a good game, but unfortunately Arsenal won 1-0. Mm-hmm. And then it was basically seeing away games in the Midlands, and then when I went up to Manchester to shoot the Grimleys, that was when I started being able to go to Old Trafford. So I got a mate who lived in Manchester, an old schoolmate, Sonam Naya, Sam, and Sam was had become a big Man U fan when he moved to Manchester, and we went to Old Trafford quite a few times because he was a season ticket holder, and that was great actually going there.
Yes. Okay, well, we'll touch on your match day rituals then and now in a moment, but before we do that, you've mentioned a couple of boys there, Brian Robson, Gordon Strachan. Did you have a favourite player though as a kid?
Yeah, for Man U it will have been in the 80s Brian Robson.
Yes. Right.
And then when I first got into football in the 70s, when I was playing as a kid, I fancied myself as a winger. So it was kind of Steve Coppell, Gordon Hill.
Yeah, we've had a few of them, Coppell and Gordon Hill, haven't we?
I love that. You know, Gordon Hill coming up from Millwall was such a move for a sort of a young footballer. And Steve Coppell, just we talked about him before on the show, is a somewhat revolutionary player. He made that wide right role different from the way you often saw it.
Yeah, I mean, he was great to watch. And I remember when he, I don't know if it was his England debut, but it was certainly a big game where he got a lot of attention. And he just kept doing the job. He kept just taking on the fullback and delivering crosses into the box, which was, you know, back in those days, that was sort of the simplistic idea of what a winger would do. And also what I remember about Steve Coppell was that they made a big deal about the fact that he was educated.
Yes, that was didn't he? Yeah,
that was his first mistake, wasn't it?
He had a degree. A-levels,
perhaps. It was like it ain't half hot mum when they talk about the guy having a university degree. Yeah. It was like that. And he, I think he had a degree in economics.
He did.
But I remember the build-up to one of the FA Cups. I don't know if it was 76 or 77, but they showed all the Man United players, and then they showed Steve Coppell reading a very thick book.
Oh, no. Well, that's his credibility out the window.
The other one, Jed will tell you this, was talking about is glasses. Glasses in a book, you're cast, you're done then. You're cerebral. you're the brains of the bunch.
Exactly right, that's right. But he was a smart cook, and he proved that as a manager as well.
So, Jed, you've obviously, you've talked quite a lot. You've got Italian heritage. And you've, I think we've spoken in the past that you've got a fondness for the Italian football team, and major tournaments were always something you thoroughly enjoyed, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean that's a big part of my identity that I'm still kind of thinking about, because as a kid growing up in a kind of working class English town in the 70s, you were under a lot of pressure to assimilate. You know, you didn't want to seem non-English or non-British.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents were both Italian. They worked very hard to assimilate into Britain and got good jobs. And we benefited as kids from being pushed through education. But you didn't want to talk too much about having a fondness for the Italian side. And I remember loads of times in school, you know, there were some kids, not my mates, but there were some kids who were really nasty about being from an Italian background. Mm-hmm. And the reason I remember it most clearly is because for the 78 World Cup, England were in the same qualifying group as Italy.
They did, yeah.
And Italy qualified ahead of England. I think it was on goal difference, but basically... Italy had beaten England in their home game, and then they'd managed to not be too heavily defeated in the game at Wembley. And so there was a lot of rancor about that, because that was two World Cups on the trot that England hadn't qualified for.
Yeah.
And what I do remember is that when we watched the 78 World Cup within the house, we were really open about supporting Italy. And I think it's something that my dad was really pleased about, because I'd spent a lot of time, and, you know, this is a difficult thing to talk about because he's, you know, my parents are no longer with me, but at times quite vocally rejecting Italian heritage. Mm-hmm. as a desire to assimilate with British culture.
Mm-hmm.
And always supporting England. And so I think my dad particularly was really touched by the fact that we watched Italy in that World Cup, and I supported Italy. And I remember the big game I remember in 78 was in the group stage. It was a night game against Argentina, and it was the most exciting game I'd seen to that point. It was so tight, you know, two of the world's top teams.
Yes, yeah.
In like a real cauldron in the Argentine stadium. And Roberto Bottega scored a goal in the second half. Really tight game, just ball popped up to him and he slotted it, and my dad and I just really cheered.
Yeah.
And it was a really great childhood memory of being really open about that Italian connection.
Do you know, and the beauty of it is, I think football, yeah, to be allowed to celebrate your own DNA, football,
yeah,
is absolutely the thing, yes, that you can do that with. And I think that's a lovely story. Plus, also, can I commend you on the best Northern Italian name I've ever heard in my life, in Jed Mercurio. I mean, it's what a combo. It's absolutely perfect. I could never have guessed what your heritage was.
Yeah.
Have you got a favourite piece of memorabilia or a memento that you cherish?
On your video feed, you might be able to see on the wall behind me, there are some vintage photographs. And one of those is from the 1966 World Cup. And it's signed by Sir Geoff Hurst.
Nice. Well, yes.
So that's...
Three goals in that game, everyone. I just want to mention that.
Mark's a West Ham fan, obviously.
West Ham Geoff Hurst scored three goals in that game.
West Ham won the World Cup.
Thank you, Jade Mercurio.
Yeah, I quite like the conspiracy theory now that there's no real evidence that England won the World Cup in 66. There's just a bit of grainy footage that was probably fake.
So grassy knoll stuff, is
it? Yeah, it was West Ham. Let's just say that now, isn't it? I was going to say, obviously, one of the great games in world football history, arguably the greatest game to many people, was the Italian-Brazil game of 1982. Do you remember that game, Jed?
Oh, gotcha. I remember watching that and really actually thinking that our chance had gone in 78 as an Italian family, you know, because in 82, England had qualified.
They did, yeah.
And I honestly did support England then much more than Italy. And I think as we sort of feared the worst, we thought Brazil was so good and they were going to win. I mean, they had that incredible midfield, you know, Socrates, Falcao, Zico Junior. Those guys were world-class players.
Yeah.
And there was a sense that sort of 78 was Italy's chance. And if they'd been incredibly unlucky in 78,
yeah,
you know, all the dodgy goal difference that Argentina got.
The Peru game, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? You know, and also, like, the massive thing, like you said, about Italy playing Argentina is the Italian heritage of a lot of Argentinian people. Yeah. So it was almost like that. It was extra, wasn't it, on that game?
Totally, totally. So then when the Brazil game, you just thought Brazil were going to coast it. And then it was just extraordinary. It ended up being incredibly one-sided in terms of possession, but the Italy were deadly. Oh. And actually, people forget that Italy had a goal disallowed. I think Antonioni scored a goal that was given offside, and actually he was onside. The margin of victory would have been even greater.
Yeah. There's a great quote, and I think it was from the French, a great French newspaper. What's the great sporting newspaper they got in France? Kind of L'Equipe. And it described Rossi that day as being like a scalpel going through Brazilian fans.
Yes.
You know, razor sharp. Only one little chance, he scored every single time. And I just thought it was a beautiful description of how he played that day, Rossi. Yeah. It was just like, it was redemption for him because he'd been embroiled in the cheating scandal and all that, which he vigorously denied. And here was his chance on a world stage against what people thought was the greatest team, better than the 1970 Brazil team, and Italy won.
It was an incredibly exotic experience, wasn't it? It was fabulous stuff. Can I ask you, have you got a favourite player at the moment then, Jed?
Well, I find him a frustrating player to be your favourite, but Bruno Fernandes is probably one of the most inconsistent players. And you know, there's that saying in golf that there's no commentary on the scorecard,
right?
And it's like you look at Bruno's stats and you think this guy must be absolutely flawless as a player, and then you watch a game and you watch him just give away possession and argue about nothing and, you know, have really good opportunities to play people in and just completely mess it up and then other times do things incredibly sublime, you know, just a free kick, a shot, I mean, the other night, an incredible cross, incredible finish, and then you just kind of think, oh, please do it every week.
I know. He is one of those players.
I call that love-hate.
Well, we've all got them, haven't we?
Yeah.
Where you just think, if you could just do that all the time. I suppose that's what makes Brian Clough used to have a theory that the great, great players are just consistent. That's what he used to say. Every game is a 7 or an 8 out of 10.
And therefore, arguably, you don't notice them in the same way. Yes. But as you say, when Bruno's good, he's very, very good.
Talking of consistency,
That's right.
This is what you call a radio segue. Everything you seem to write, Jed, is of excellent quality.
But I mean, 7 or 8 out of 10,
yes,
Jed.
Absolutely. You're sort of like a Ronaldo-esque, I suppose, and always producing most games. But I mean, I don't want to embarrass you, but you are considered to be one of the great modern writers now in television, certainly in Britain. I mean, when you sit down with something like Line of Duty or The Bodyguard, do you think, oh, I'm going to write an era-defining series here?
Or do you just think,
I can't think like that. I'm just going to write something that I know and that I want to write.
Yeah, it's got to be that you're interested in it and invested in it. And you've just got to use your judgment and think, well, if it's something that I would watch, then there's a fair chance other people would watch it. And I also think about, you know, what my expectations are with a particular genre. If I'm writing a police thriller or a kind of conspiracy thriller like Bodyguard was, you know, having a think about if I were to go and see a film, or I was going to embark on watching a box set that was set in that genre, what would I want it to be as a viewer? And that's always the starting point for me.
And it's interesting, Line of Duty's on later tonight, one of the most anticipated TV events, certainly of the last few years. For me, it's interesting because obviously I'm Vicky McClure's partner who's in the show. But when I first met Vicky, she hadn't even gone out the first season. She'd, I've done this sort of cop show that's on BBC Two, and there's lots of cop shows that come and go on British television. And I kind of went, all right, okay, we'll see how it does. But I thought you were very interesting there in that you noticed a certain chemistry between three of the actors in particular, Vicky, Martin Comston and Adrian Dunbar, and you've seen that and you developed that.
So built on that,
yes,
yeah?
Absolutely. I thought that was really clever that you noticed that. And they are, like as you are with them, very, very tight, aren't they? It's almost like a football team where you get that extra bond of a team together, just seems to work well together.
Yeah, I mean, they're great together. And that's part of the chemistry of success. You know, I've been fortunate enough to do a number of returning series over the years. And one of the things that's absolutely essential is that you have that balance between the characters and the way the cast embody them, because that's what the audience is really coming back for.
Yes.
They get invested in the characters' stories. And, you know, we're incredibly fortunate with Line of Duty to have such amazing loyal fans. And the thing that they really care about is what those three characters will achieve in each season.
Brilliant. True. Line of Duty is no Bruno. There are. That's all you need. this much is clear. Right, now I'd be tempted, given the stories you've been telling here, to be looking to the Azzurri to perhaps answer this question. But have you got a best ever kit?
Well, you've done well there. You've done well.
Ooh,
there, Mark. Yeah.
He's like one of your characters, so, really, to do something.
It is, actually. I actually played, back when I was playing football, before my darting midfield runs wrecked my knee.
Sorely missed on the field of play, Jed. I've heard it so many times, yeah.
Honestly, football has been much the poorer for my absence. Yeah, I actually played for a five-a-side team who were called the Azzurri, and we had the Italian kit, and I chose a vintage Paolo Rossi 82 World Cup number 20.
Nice. It is. There's, you know, sometimes there's, but I mean, I'm old-fashioned, and I see perfection in simplicity often, and just and I will take it back to the 70 kit, a long sleeve crew neck blue shirt. It's gold for me. But as you say, they kept the standard high all the way through the decades.
Yes.
It's a great shirt. It's actually kind of another vintage shirt I had that's quite similar to that was the Man U 68 European Cup winning shirt.
Yeah.
Because they played in blue that night.
That's right. Was that out of nowhere, that blue shirt? Was it always
Yeah, I think it
stuff?
Was like a... I think it was a bespoke piece of kit, and so again, you know, the vintage shirt manufacturers online have just, you know, that was a particular piece of kit that was just so unusual it was worth having.
It was worth it. I just so you both know as well, I don't know if you know this before we move on to the next question, but Italy obviously play in blue. Their flag is famously red, white and green. They play in blue because the House of Savoy, which unified Italy, the royal family, their emblem was blue, and that's why they play in blue.
What? What a knowledge. Didn't know that.
A
quirk of history.
Isn't
so that's
it,
why
though?
They play in blue.
Fantastic.
Even though it's not the colours on their flag. Anyway.
Oh, okay. It's always worth talking to you, John.
I might manage to say a mine of useless information in his Welsh accent.
And he's had no minds.
yeah, exactly. another team, Jed, you've got a soft spot for.
That would be Wolves. Because Canuck's nearest team is Wolves. And in the 70s, they were a very solid first division side with a couple of glamour players like John Richards and local TV in the middle. You know, ATV Today used to rejoice in getting a local footballer on every now and then. And so it was just something that was part of my childhood again. And they went through a bad time, and now they're enjoying good times again. So always great to see them do well.
Wow. Yes, nice to hear.
They, nice quite to frankly, hear. By way of their own tradition and history, they are back where they belong, you know, in the top flight. So that's a great shout.
Yeah, I mean, they're a massive side, and, you know, what seems bizarre is that Bruno doesn't play for them, because you would imagine the entire Portuguese squad.
Yes, I was going to say, how come he didn't end up there?
Yeah, something's gone wrong there.
Mendes. Yeah, don't tell Mendes.
This is the Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport.
Even on a budget, Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, so we're going to go through your best 11 now, and you've got obviously, are you going to do an Italian one or a Manchester United one?
It'll be Man United.
Okay, cool. So I was going to say both would be
both
an embarrassment.
Both welcome.
Embarrassment of riches. Yes. But we'll start with Manchester United. So we'll start in goals then, Jed.
I'm going to go with Peter Schmeichel because of his commanding presence and just his consistency, going back to that word.
Peter Schmeichel in goals. And then you're back. Are you going to go 4-4-2?
I'm going for quite an attack-minded 4-3-3
formation. Oh, you see. This, which is so un-Azzurri,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'm assuming your five-a-side, you play 1-4.
This is his Jed more than his Mercurial.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. This isn't a side designed to grind out a new Bratislava to go through on goal
difference. Yes. So fair enough then. Okay. Bet four.
Back four. Okay. I really struggled to think of a right back at Man United. I just couldn't come up with one at all.
Right.
Gary
Neville?
I'm going to go for John Gidman,
John Gidman,
the obvious choice.
Yes.
Villa, wasn't he, I think? Wasn't he got...
He was Villa. I mean, his heyday was at Villa, and Ron Atkinson signed it.
That's right, he did. But he signed him at McGrath, didn't he? That's right. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. And the thing about John Gidman I liked was that, and this will be very important for this side, is that he was great going forward. He was very fast and he played other people in really smartly. So I know there's an obvious choice there, but I'm not going to give him the satisfaction. So I'm going to go for Gidman.
Okay, I mentioned the name I shouldn't, do you know what I mean? I just don't want to send you into Martin Comston territory here, where he didn't pick Danny McGrain for Celtic. Yeah. Got massively, massively sort of a load of stick on social media and then blamed me.
Well, he blamed Johnny, you.
Why didn't you tell me? I was like, it was your team. Do you know what I mean? I can't pick your team for you.
We've had murders with actors, Jed. Honestly, I don't know how you get up in the morning. Stephen Graham would try to change his side about
Stephen
14
Graham.
Times. Didn't he? He went for it and he rang up and said, I've got to change my left back.
There was almost an international incident after Adrian Dunbar. He went for an all-Ireland team. Can you imagine that went down on social media?
Oh, my God.
I know, yeah. Anyway, you're back for...
Just Jed, this is like every day at work for Jed.
I know it is, yeah, bless him.
Right, sorry, yes. The rest of your back
four. Yeah, so in keeping with my thinking about the full-backs, I'm actually going to bring us bang up to date with the left-back and go for Luke Shaw.
Oh, there you go. The comeback kid.
Yeah, and to keep harping on about consistency, in a Man United side that have really suffered from inconsistency in the last few seasons, you know, he's really developed into someone who is a really reliable performer.
Yeah.
And even when the team play badly, he tends to do his job well.
Yeah. He's well in with an England shirt, Mark, I'd say, would you?
He's hit the form just that they signed him for on. So, yeah, definitely.
Centre halves, then.
Centre halves, I'm going to go for Rio Ferdinand.
Yes.
I mean, one of the best of all time. Yeah. And I've actually met a really lovely guy.
Yeah, as well. Man. Smashing fella. Yeah.
And and to his credit, he was a Bodyguard fan. So, you know.
There you go.
Flattery gets you everywhere.
Obviously, I feel that he's achieved more than I have, but it was kind of quite uplifting to hear him say. I mean, the obvious partner would be to partner him up with Vidic, but I'm going to go off piste again here, and I'm going to pick someone who played for Man United but then developed into one of the world's best elsewhere, Gerard Piqué.
Okay, yeah,
interesting. Yeah, yeah. It's weird that it was perceived that the way he played his football wouldn't work in the Premier League, wasn't it? I mean, this is fundamentally why he went, wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah. He just needed time to develop.
Yeah.
Mr. Header, apparently, in Bolton, and he said to Ferguson, you don't trust me ever since that. I want to go back. I was reading about it the other day, and he went back, and Ferguson was like, I wish I kept him now.
One header in Bolton,
yeah,
did it?
Yeah. Header, yeah.
Good load.
And I think once your manager loses your trust, it's like Jed with an actor, I suppose, or a character. It's very difficult to get it back. This was... Gerard's,
yeah, I mean, we see the psychological effect that can have on players. I mean, it's never clearer than in someone like Lingard. Look what's happened there.
Yeah,
I'm just working on the principle. If you need a new five-a-side team from where you're from now, the PK blinders.
Oh,
I'll just write that down for you, Jim, in case you forget it. All right.
Yeah.
So moving on very quickly, if we
onwards
could.
to the midfield. How are you doing? Are you midfield?
Yeah, I'm gonna pick a player who I obviously never saw play, but I'm picking him on reputation and what might have been, and also just to tap into some of the legacy of Man United. I'm going to pick Duncan Edwards.
Oh, brilliant. Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And localish to your area.
Yeah, that's right. You know, an incredible story, and so tragically cut short, but by all accounts, would have been one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, that is one of the saddest stories ever in football. I mean, obviously, the whole tragedy, but just this idea that this young kid was on the verge of genuine greatness.
Already great.
Yeah.
Already.
And with a whole 10 more years of him to come, you know. Yeah. So,
very
yeah.
sad. It's a lovely choice, yeah.
So, Duncan Edwards, who joins him in midfield?
So, I'm going to put Brian Robson in there.
Yep.
And I'm going to put Bobby Charlton in there.
That's a very decent midfield. And this is the thing with Manchester United. You just can't ever go... Oof.
You've got a couple of three captains right there as well, just in case. Would you?
Yeah.
You've got arguably... Who
gets the armband?
Arguably the greatest English player ever, you'd say, Bobby Charlton. In the sense that, I mean, he won everything, didn't he?
Yeah.
Won European Cups and World Cups.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of people think he's probably... In terms of career performance and internationals as well, probably our most successful ever player.
I agree with that.
He was not necessarily
the most skillful, but those have, you know, unfortunately, those players have had quite a tragic trajectory for other reasons.
Mm. It's a beautiful bit in there when he wins the, I think the sports personality of the century or something, the English sort of, and his brother Jack Charlton gives him the award, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he says, the best player I've ever seen was our Bobby. It's a beautiful moment.
Which, given the nature of their sadness of their kind of own domestic connections.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful moment where he says, the greatest player ever was my brother.
Probably the most important man going into the 66 World Cup final was Bobby Charlton.
Yeah.
You know, I know that hindsight as, you know, Bobby Moore as a skipper, etc., Jeff Hurst emerging, but Charlton was the instrumental figure.
He scored the big goal against Portugal. Was it Portugal he scored that goal?
Semi-final. I think he scored both. Yeah. I think he scored two in the semi against Portugal.
And if you need any more, I always harp back. I heard him on the radio talking about, very much in his dotage, talking about the fact that even sort of at that age, he's at the traffic lights. And if there's a game of football on the park, he can't go until the corner's been taken. Even if the lights change, he's got to see the corner.
Yeah.
And you just know that's a football man, isn't it? Okay, so that's there's plenty of flair and endeavour in that in the middle three.
Creativity.
How about your top three?
Top three, I'm going to go for best Rooney and Ronaldo.
It's always quite, like I was saying, I always think with Manchester United, a bit like Liverpool, you kind of always go, oh, okay. When you see the front three, it's very difficult to sort of say all three world class.
But that, you know, the nice thing, you can see the shape that those three could make on the field of play, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, the thing about Best was he could play anywhere.
Yeah.
But, and again, because he was slightly before my time and there's so little footage of him, but you do see him cutting in from the left, joining from midfield. You know, he was the total footballer of his age. And, you know, I can see him fitting in from there. Ronaldo, when he played at Man United, often played on the right and attacked from the right. And Rooney often sat deeper and didn't necessarily play as an out-and-out number nine, but he could do it, and he could do it very well.
Wow, record goal scorer for Manchester United. We often say this. The only thing I was going to say to you now is a big one, and I know you'll go, Cantona. You didn't find anywhere for Cantona.
That's a really good point, and I would say that he transformed Man United as a league side, but I've got one eye on European on
this. Yeah.
He's thought about it. He's thought about it.
Isn't it, really?
And it was something. I mean, Roy Keane is not one to mince his words.
There's another.
And in his autobiography, which was a thoroughly interesting insight to borderline sociopathy, he talked about Cantona and said, you know, in European games, Cantona could barely get a kick and he wasn't regularly picked for France. He was a very, very effective and utterly brilliant player for Man United in the Premier League and transformed them. And I was a huge Cantona fan. But, you know, if you're looking at Man United through the ages, there's such an embarrassment of riches. To be honest, you know, they could have two or three benches full of world-class
stars. You are allowed a bench, and we'll put him on there. And I think, Johnny, that in Jed as the man behind the camera, he can be like, "Oh, you flaky turns," and I think he'll stick by this 11.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
we're going to get any phone calls about Eric Cantona.
I think it's a great debate. I love, and that's why you find out with Jed how the mind works, why he went for this team. This team is competing in Europe, Mark, not just domestically.
He's mapped it out for us perfectly. Yes. The man has seen the plot, and he knows.
He's got a European background himself. He thinks of the bigger picture, as did Sir Matt Busby.
I think that Sir Alex Ferguson obviously transformed United's fortunes and overtook Liverpool in terms of league titles. But Man United have remained behind Liverpool in terms of European success.
They have.
I think that this side is what's required to turn the tide there.
I love it. I love it. Can I ask you who your manager would be then?
Go on.
Oh, well, you know, I was toying with Ron Atkinson, obviously. Dave Sexton. Well, Ron actually appeared in The Grimleys.
We
had a scene where the kids were playing a schools match, and Brian Connolly, the PE teacher, was obviously coaching the team for the cast, and then Big Ron was the PE teacher at the other school.
Brilliant.
And he brought them in, and he was great.
Did you stick
really
him in the tracksuit, did you, and everything? Did he have the whistle around the neck and all that? The work?
He actually came in the big suit. He was playing like the
did
Flash
he?
Harry type.
It's
big rings on the fingers and stuff.
What was I thinking? It's Big Ron.
Play the tape.
So I think it's pretty obvious that we have to go for Sir Alex.
I've written it down. Don't worry about that.
I mean, the greatest modern manager of that. There is no question. Did you say that you wanted Duncan Edwards to be the captain of the team?
I would probably ask Sir Alex to take Brian and Duncan aside and decide. I think that, you know, this.
However, the diplomat.
I would say Robson actually.
Captain Marvel.
Well, and for club and country, you know, there's no underestimate. You cannot underestimate the work that he did. So fair enough.
That's a very, very tidy European looking Manchester United football team. Jed Mercurio, it's been an absolute pleasure. Good luck tonight with the new series. I'm sure it's going to be a triumph.
Cheers, guys. Really enjoyed it.
You're listening to the Best 11 podcast from TalkSport.
Okay, so as you know, at AC12, we have to learn a lot of acronyms. And Johnny, I've got to say, your little slip up earlier with Martin's rank means you don't know very much. So I think it's time you learn. And I'm going to test you both on some of these.
Can I just, point of order, not my fault. In the script, I am like him in Anchorman. I read the script. I tell him this. I will read whatever you put in front of me. It's a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
So he can shout in my ear in his Bristolian tones as much as he wants. He got it wrong. Jamie Hutchinson got that wrong, not Johnny Owen. Anyway, carry on.
I mean, look at that. Mark, good luck.
Thank you very much.
I hope you win.
Do you know, if I do... there really is issues with John.
Anyway, I've tried to keep it simple. And basically, I'm going to stick to the ranks. Now, if you get the answer right, you're going to hear this.
I was sucking diesel.
Thank you, AD. If you get the answer wrong, you will hear this.
You losing it out there.
Okay. Right, so to start with.
Yes.
DC. DC.
Do we answer you now?
Yes.
Detective Constable.
Okay, Johnny, go.
Detective Constable.
Correct.
Thank you.
Well done.
Right, okay, well done.
You're having that. John's got that one, okay.
Mark.
Yes, please.
What about DS?
Detective Sergeant.
Well done. Thank you. Okay, okay. Right, I am D.I. Fleming. Johnny? Right.
Detective Inspector.
Right, so you do know what you're talking about. Okay.
Not that I'm competitive, but I need a win after Wales last night. I don't want to talk about it.
And by the way, he's extraordinarily competitive.
Right. Don't I know it? Mark.
Go on.
Here's an easy one for you.
Thank you.
If you don't get it, you're in trouble.
Go on.
AC-12.
Accrington State.
I mean,
advanced.
I was thinking the same
chicken.
You losing it out there, fella.
Albert Creosote.
No, that is, I'm sorry, that's an from me.
Oh, like, dear.
Action crime?
This is, I might actually leave.
You losing it?
Leave me? I done it, it's over.
Because I said that a cartoon.
Action Crime 12, does that make sense?
Anti-corruption, that's what the whole show is based on.
Why 12?
Wow. Right, okay, 2-1, let's go.
Am I still winning 2-1?
This is for the win.
Do you know why there's a 12, by the way? Can I ask about 12? No?
There's 12 departments. Johnny.
Yes.
Pay attention.
Concentrate. It's like being in school again. Sorry, miss.
You. DSU.
He ain't got this. He ain't got three. He can't do three. He's done.
Special unit. Drug special unit.
Nope. Detective superintendent.
No, it's DCU.
No.
DCI.
No.
What did you say?
DSU.
It's detective superintendent.
Yeah.
Well, that throws you. There's no I in there.
Don't throw your pen down.
You're losing it out there, fella.
That is a tough one, John. And I feel for you, but you didn't win.
Mark, let's see if you can tie it.
Thank you.
Right. You.
Yeah.
C.
Yeah.
O.
UCO, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, no, UCO.
All the cockiness has gone out of his body.
No. Undercover cooperative organisation.
Where have you gone? You were doing so well.
Undercover. Commanding officer.
Undercover officer.
Just officer.
How simple as that?
Yeah, simple as that.
So a policeman with a moustache.
I don't think... Do you know what? I think
today... One for you, Vicky. OCG.
That is...
Don't look at it for me.
Organised crime group.
Gang. Yes.
We're sucking diesel.
How about this one? C-O-Y-I.
Come on, you boys.
You're close.
You're very close.
You got come on you. Well, 3/4 of it correct. Well done.
Is that right?
I thought I'd thrown you a curveball there as well. Benjamin
has sent the question. Oh, yes. Will we see the return of Ryan in CD6? And please tell me Carly Kirk joins AC12. Absolutely love Line of Duty. That's Benjamin. And he cannot wait. Capital letters,
Carly. Oh, nice one, Benjamin. Carly Kirk, she was from, like, Series 2, I think.
She did.
I can't remember.
Oh, Vicky, come on. I said, Neil Morrissey dead? And she was like,
Morrissey's not. And in terms of everything, you're going to have to just wait and see, guys. You've got to watch the show. No spoilers.
That's what you should say. They're dead. Or are they?
Exactly.
Always
or
do.
Or no comment, which is very fitting.
Or even better.
Instead of no comment, NC.
The Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport.
Thank you for listening to the Best 11 podcast. Don't forget there are new episodes out every Monday and Thursday. So join us for more football memories and another Best 11 very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.